Once a month, we hear what it is like to live with mental illness. Our guides are the people of Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. It's built on the clubhouse model of community mental health care. It is a place where people with persistent mental illness come together to support each other and their shared place. This month in Compass Radio, we meet Brandon, who describes life with bipolar disorder to Compass House staffer Remington Jarvie.
Tell us a little about yourself. Were you born and raised in Southern Oregon?
Yes, I was born and raised in Southern Oregon, born at the Rogue Valley Hospital, actually. And it's always going to be home. I've been all over the nation, Florida, New York, Arkansas, Ohio, all that kind of stuff. And I always end up coming home, though.
So what are you doing these days? What's your life look like?
Well, my life right now is still a bit of a struggle. I've been on and off the streets. And so that kind of has a lot to do with my diagnosis with depression and bipolar 2. I went through a very tough spell in my mid-20s. And so I recently just came into some... I guess the accurate term is actually an inheritance from a buddy of mine who was diagnosed with brain cancer 8 years ago, and he unfortunately passed away actually a week ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's probably been the toughest part about my life recently was that, because he was probably, you know, I guess it's one, you're gonna meet that one person in your life where everything about that person is just everything you've needed in a friend. And that was him. And he will always be in my heart. And it was his choice to sign me up for the money when he should pass. And you know, like I said, it's been really, really tough for me. But that's the biggest thing, I guess, to help me in my life from where I'm at. And so it's been a very big thing for me to deal with and to accept.
So you said that's been a recent challenge of yours, and you mentioned bipolar and depression. How old are you when, I guess, you realized that was something that you dealt with?
I was actually very young when I realized that I thought differently than a lot of people. I felt differently than a lot of people. And I realized at a very young age, I didn't know it was depression. I'll put it that way. I knew it was something to do with a grief that I couldn't explain. A way I saw the world, I guess. Or a way I reacted to the world. And I was officially diagnosed when I was 26 years old. I went to Jackson County Mental Health, got the whole diagnosis. I was later diagnosed with bipolar 2 because I'd have these very short spells in my life where I would get a very intense kind of brief mania. Not where, like, I would go off the hook and just do everything. I would just get really... I'm not the most social guy, but I would have these brief periods of mania where I would just overdo it. Like, I just had to meet and talk with everybody. And it would just expend all of my energy. And then right after that, I just hit this wall of depression every time. And that diagnosis actually came this past summer when I was in Portland. I stayed the summer up in Portland, and a doctor, a psychiatrist, was speaking about that to me. He says, "Have you ever had spells of mania?" And I just got to thinking. I said, "Describe mania exactly." And it hit me, the most accurate thing I've heard in a long time, even more than depression, because I don't always feel depressed. But the bipolar's always there. You know, like, I can kind of sense when I'm being more active or overly active, and then I can sense, like, okay, I know my depression's going to hit here pretty quick. Just got to get ready for this. And so that was a real big understanding for me.
Okay, so that was just this last summer that yes. Talked to you and it just clicked?
And mm-hmm. You're like, that sounds, and that's like when I got my most recent diagnosis. They put me on some meds to help with that.
So you mentioned at 26 you were diagnosed with depression.
Yes.
And then it's just recently the bipolar... Clear, and you're like, yeah, that makes sense. That sounds mm-hmm. like me. Was it a relief to have that diagnosis, to think yes. that there's people that understood it, or was it kind of like a bad label? Like, how did?
No, it was an eye-opening experience for me. It was like the missing piece of the puzzle, so to speak, because the depression fit, but it didn't explain everything. Like, I knew there was something more, and I had no idea what it was. And so when I had heard about the bipolar 2, I was flabbergasted. I was just like, wow, okay, now a whole lot of other things make sense. And that was, like I said, that was a huge kind of an awakening moment for me to realize, okay, now that I know what it is, now I have an understanding of what I can do to work with that. Because if I don't know, I'm just guessing it, trying to fix something I'm unsure about.
Right. So you mentioned those like periods of mania, and then you hit a wall and depression. How did you cope with that? Like before you were diagnosed,
I didn't. I was coping the wrong way. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know why I would go through these spells. I could cope with the depression when it hit, but I had no idea why it was coming. I had no idea what the whole circumstances leading up to it were. Now I can see the mania begin, and I can actually, I haven't had a depressive spell pretty much since I have left Portland, which was end of September. Now that I know a lot more of what I'm dealing with, I know myself a lot better. So I can feel it coming. I'm like, oh, I see what I'm doing. So I can actually take the necessary steps to kind of step back from that. And so the depression doesn't have to hit me the way it used to.
Mm-hmm. So you were, I guess that would elicit incorrect coping or behaviors.
Yes,
back in
the day. Yes, that's the best way I can describe it, is I was coping with only part of it. See, now even when I have semi-depressive spells, I can cope with that aspect of it because I've been coping with the depression for a long time. Now that I see the mania spells and leading up to what causes the severe depression, I don't have to go through the whole process. I can stop it short, and so I just end up in kind of like a semi-depressive state, which is a lot easier to cope with than running the whole gambit and trying to cope with something I'm not entirely understanding.
Have your behaviors changed for what you did or how you dealt with it in those low points till now? Have you grown in your coping? What does that look like?
I think the best way to describe it is, it's like having two different people and they both understand football two different ways. One of them almost never watched any football, grew up around it, but has no idea how the rules work, still likes to watch football. And then you have the other person who's just a diehard football fan their entire life. So this person understands it all. They just get it. So for them, watching is not difficult. They understand what's going to happen. They understand how it works. That's what it's like for me to deal with my bipolar and depression. Now, I know how the plays run. I know when somebody gets a touchdown. I know when somebody has a safety. I know all the rules. Well, still getting to all the rules, but I understand it a lot better. Whereas before, I was the person who knew the game, but not how the game worked. And so I was still watching the game of my life and still participating, but I was only understanding that one team with the ball tries to score and the other team tries to stop them. I just had no idea how that worked. So that's the best way I can describe it now.
That's a great analogy. That makes sense.
Yeah.
What do you think most people don't understand about bipolar depression? What is a common misconception that people don't know how to deal with people, their loved ones, their friends that struggle with that?
I think the most common misperception from what I've seen is that it's not as life destructive as people think. I think when somebody who goes through a severe depressive spell, I mean, it really is one of the most destructive emotions to somebody's life, because especially if you're early on in depression and are just really starting to go with it, it's the toughest thing, and the people from the outside don't see what's going on inside. They just can't. It's not their fault that they don't understand it. It's just there's no possible way for that person experiencing that severe of depression to describe it properly, because that person, it's crippling mentally and emotionally. And so a person in the middle of a group discussion just starts crying for no reason, other people see this as almost a crazy behavior. That person knows exactly why they're crying. That person is feeling every deep emotion that just makes them burst out in tears. The misperception is that they don't see what's going on in that person's heart or head.
If I had a friend or a family member that dealt with this, what's the best things I could do to help or support them or let them know that I care?
I think the most important thing that I've realized for myself, I always tried to fix people when I heard what they were going through or that they were going through something difficult. And in my experience, I realized that the most important thing I can do for another is actually let them cry. Just listen, just be there. If they need a hand on their back in support, they need a shoulder to cry on. If they just need to rant or complain or they just want to be heard, I've sat with more people and done more good just listening than any time I've offered advice or any time I thought I had the answers. For me, I think people learn to trust me more, that I understand what they're going through when I'm just there for them.
That is Brandon, a member of Compass House, Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford, talking to Remington Jarvie at the house in this month's edition of Compass Radio. This is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Elizabeth Hazelwood is the executive director of Compass House and joins me in the studio once again. Elizabeth, always good to see you.
Thank you.
So talk about the kinds of things that people get when, as Brandon did, they walk into Southern Oregon Compass House. What sorts of things do you offer to them? What sort of expectations do you have of them?
Well, the first thing is Compass House is all about choice. People get to choose. And a lot of times that's a new and refreshing feeling because choice is often taken out of the mental health system. So to be able to walk in and be told, we will help you do whatever it is you choose to do, whether you want to get a job, whether you want to go back to school, whether you want somewhere where you can come where you're safe during the day, and have people that care about you. And Brandon is amazing. He is a fantastic example of someone who has become who they really are now, finally. When he first started coming, he didn't interact. He kind of played on the computer on his own, didn't really want to get engaged, really wanted to stay by himself. And now he's an entirely different person. I was talking to him yesterday about all of those changes. He went from someone that really shied away from talking to anybody to where now he goes to the behavioral health unit and actually talks to people that are currently in the hospital about coming to Compass House and about the things that in his life have brought him where he is. And he is just, it's amazing to watch him and his progress and watch how he is now becoming more comfortable with himself.
In a case like that, where somebody comes in and it's clear they're not quite ready to engage, I just wonder how much you encourage or how often you check in anyway, just to see how they're doing and whether they're ready to take part or if it's always fine that they're off in a corner or something.
Both. We do everything together, members and staff. And so we have unit meetings and morning meetings. And then we also have tasks that we do as part of the work order day. Everything is choice and voluntary. So no one is forced to do anything. But there is an expectation of participation. And that can look different for everybody. And how that goes about is people coming up throughout the day and saying, hey, Brandon, I really need some help with this. Do you want to help? And it can be something like helping fix lunch, or it can be writing a grant or entering attendance or answering the phones. But it's not so much about the task. It's about that connection and having someone come to you and value you as a human being and to ask for your help. We all as humans want to be wanted and needed. And to have people that legitimately care about you as a person and want you to help is life-changing sometimes. I've had people say nobody's wanted me to help with anything in years.
I think I hear the difference in approaches. It's not, hey, would you do this? We expect you to do this. It's like, hey, we could use your help. You could do this for us.
Absolutely. And with us. Mm-hmm. It's not scary when you're helping someone by reading off names and attendance. And before you know it, you are then learning how to do that. And you're teaching new members how to enter attendance into a database. And you're the expert.
You mentioned that Brandon does outreach, visits the behavioral health unit. I'm just curious to know about the rest of the outreach operation at Compass House. How often do you go out and where do you go out to try to convince people that this could be a place for them?
Absolutely. Well, we go to the behavioral health unit twice a week. We do
That's at Rogue Regional Medical Center?
Absolutely. It's the only inpatient here in Southern Oregon. So we make sure that we meet with everyone that their staff feels like is ready and would be a good fit for Compass House. And we are part of their discharge planning. That way, when they leave the hospital, they have a place to go that where they can get the supports that they need outside of the hospital setting. And it's a beautiful partnership that we have with them. We also work closely with the mental health centers, Columbia Care, Jackson County Mental Health Options, to make sure that anyone that is diagnosed with a mental illness knows that we're here. We partner with 42 other agencies. And so it's really important to get out there and just every chance that we get, talk to people. We go to the missions, we go to the Kelly Shelter, just so people know that we exist. Exist and that we are there for them when they are ready.
Are you bumping up against any issues of capacity to be able to handle all the clubhouse members?
Yes, absolutely. Right now, our average daily attendance is 41 members a day that come in and get services. In 2018, we provided over 36,000 hours to members with just under 9,000 visits. The building we're in now is at capacity. The building that we're renovating and we hope to be in July is more than three times the size, so capacity won't be an issue when we move in there.
You mentioned good fit. You know, you're looking for people who are a good fit for Compass House. I wonder what that is.
Well, it is a program of choice. So people have to choose to come and they want to be a part of it. It can't be court ordered. It can't be forced. It has to be something where someone says, you know what, I want to do something different. I don't know what that looks like, but let me go find out. And the thing is, it looks different for everybody. And that's good. We want it to.
Do you have an understanding with the course that there's not going to be any sort of like you have to go to Compass House and there's no compulsion there?
Absolutely. And we've said no. Now, that being said, if one of our members ends up needing to do community service or things like that, we work with them to see if they can do it with us. But we are the courts understand and respect that it is a process that people need to choose and you can't be court ordered. And the same thing goes with group homes and things like that. You can't force your people to come to the program. It has to be something that they want to do and want to be a part of.
As long as we're talking about the law and mental health, let's mm-hmm. touch briefly on an option presented to people who need mental health care. We always talk about how many people in lockup, particularly in county jails, need some mental health support. Are you identified as a resource to those people as well?
Absolutely. It is something that we work on very closely. I serve on the Mental Health Developmental Disabilities Advisory Council, and we work with the Parole and Probation Office. They do referrals to us, not for force, but that people that are going through their program and are getting reintegrated in the community have a place to go where they can be a part of. Also, we work closely with the Mental Health Court to make sure that all of those people know that we exist as well.
Just a couple seconds left. When you ask people, where would you be if not for Compass House, where were they before Compass House generally?
Usually what I hear is I would be back in the hospital.
All right. That is the answer often. Compass Radio is a production with JPR and Compass House, Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. Elizabeth Hazelwood is the executive director. We heard from Brandon this month about his story. Thanks again to Remington Jarvie for taking care of the interviewing chores. And thank you, Elizabeth, for coming back in once again.
Thank you.